Welcome to Future Commerce, the podcast about cutting edge and next generation commerce. I'm Philip.
I'm Brian.
He's timid Brian from from New York City this time.
Yeah, no, I'm not gonna lie. I was late to the show because of NYC.
That's okay. This is usually me. I'm usually the person in your seat. So he's coming at us live today from the Row, New York City. Don't try to camp out and get his autograph because he'll be gone by the time you hear this. But anyway, today we are talking about cognitive commerce.
Watson, and really anything that our first guest really wants to talk to us about. And so let me go ahead and introduce you, Tom. Should we do our intro first?
We already did our intro. We're in the show.
All right, we're in the show. Let's do it.
Yeah, this is it. So introduce yourself, Tom.
Hi, everyone. My name is Tom Robertshaw. I'm an agency owner based in the UK, a company called Meanbeat, focused on Magento. But of late, I've been very interested in the ongoings at IBM and their move towards artificial intelligence with Watson. So I'm looking forward to having a bit of a discussion about that today.
Great. And as always, we want your feedback on today's show. So you happen to be listening to this right now at futurecommerce.fm. And if you are, just scroll down to the bottom and leave us some feedback in the discuss comment box below. We also want to remind you, you can subscribe and listen to Tom's sultry voice anytime on Future Commerce, the podcast at iTunes or on Google Play, or you can listen right from your Amazon Echo with TuneIn Radio with the phrase, "Alexa, play Future Commerce." And don't you start with me right now, Alexa. You go back to sleep. There she goes. I got to get this thing out of my room.
No, you don't.
So anyway, Tom, how are things? Tell me a little bit about your background and what sort of brought you to the point of what I consider to be sort of a shift in the focus of your focus or the focus of your business at Meanbeat.
Yeah, sure. So my background has always been in computer science. So about 5 years ago now, I graduated from computer science here in Bath, started an agency because it was like the building technology was something that I loved, and e-commerce seemed like a fantastic industry to be working in. After a few years, feel like I've had quite a few experiences and feel I'm somewhat of an expert in the kind of system integrations and building sites the right way, and was looking for something a bit more of a challenge, a new area to grow in. Like many developers and with a bit of an interest in science fiction as well, I love the idea of artificial intelligence and robots and things like that are going to take over the world. And so I started playing with that last year. But math has always been like one of my difficult points, I'll admit. So as soon as I see an equation, I start to kind of glaze over. So looking to see what actually was out there as an option. And did start with a couple of like simple mathematical algorithms, but decided quite quickly that needed something, a tool that was actually going to help me, because what I've kind of realized is that I would say that I'm an innovator, more of an applier than necessarily a kind of groundbreaker when it comes to these things, just seeing opportunities to be made. So excited about what we can do with things that learn, and that's the key to it. I think that we've got very good at programming things now, and building systems. I think it's beyond time that we should have built them so that they could actually learn. So we've stopped this manual process all the time, ranking things and doing a bit more. And there's been plenty of progress to this with the kind of the big guys, whether that be like Facebook or Google in the last few years, but it's trickling down now. So it's actually accessible to you and I and for us e-commerce store owners. Nice. So when I started going about it, I was looking, okay, what services are out there? And there's lots of smaller players, startups, Y Combinator, if you're familiar with the startup scene. They've had a massive influx of startups that have been talking about machine learning and kind of moving in that direction. That's where the industry is interested in at the moment. But in terms of the big players, the big move for us is APIs. So we can now get machine learning. We can get machine learning algorithms without having to have the specialist knowledge to be able to apply them. That's the big thing for us. So you don't want to have to pay the money or spend the time, expensive consulting fees for experts in machine learning. Those things are actually available to you now. So there are APIs for, the big guys like Amazon, Microsoft as well, but they do require a bit more kind of background knowledge and statistics, etc. But Google have some that are interesting, but I've decided to spend my time on IBM Watson, learning what they've done. Obviously, their Watson program itself has been around for a few years. Audience might be familiar with its playing in the competition or the game show Jeopardy, and going on to win against some of the best that have played. And now they've opened that up. So they've created a range of APIs that are kind of tailored for specific use cases. So it is a bit easier for you to kind of get underway and recognize how you can apply them to your kind of business use cases.
Nice.
Wow, that's a phenomenal intro. Brian, totally. Brian has a million questions because I do too, but go ahead, Brian.
You kind of give us a high level summary of what's in there. I think one of the things that I'm curious to know more about, and I've done a little bit of research on this, but it seems like IBM is kind of labeling a lot of things Watson. If you could shed a little bit of light on what Watson actually is, I know that we might not be able to run a comprehensive list of things that it can do, but maybe just a little bit more definition around, what it is right now.
Yeah, sure. I found the same problem, and it has become somewhat of a branding exercise now, the direction that IBM are going in. But from my research, the way they advertise it is, they've not necessarily done lots of revolutionary things, but they've got it's a large number of algorithms, machine learning algorithms, that they've combined together into kind of one interface. So it is like essentially one big computer that is very much tailored for learning, and it's applied some of those or that computer to different problem areas. So yes, it can now work in many different industries, and they're working in the legal system, working in the health system, and very much kind of advertising as such, and going into new areas as well. But from the core of it is the machine learning. Machine learning for it, in essence, is automated classification, is the kind of simplest description. So if you have kind of some training data to start with, so things that you, questions that you know the answer to, and you give it that to start with, the idea being that later down the line, you give it a new question that has some similarities on the previous questions, and it can give you what it thinks is the best answer. And that is kind of the cusp of it, just the same sort of question that is applied to different types of problems, whether that be audio, visuals, or simple classification of labeled data.
Nice. Yeah, I like that. I think another thing that would be really useful for our listeners is to maybe give some good examples of things that Watson is doing kind of now, and then maybe what you foresee people accomplishing with it maybe in the near future, and then maybe also the long term.
Sure. One of the simplest kind of APIs that it has available now for e-commerce is one called Retrieve and Rank. The retrieve part is your basic search, so the search that you probably already have on your e-commerce store. Right. What it has is the second part, the rank, which is the learning part. So you're meant to train this search system with example queries that your customers have made, and then either the answer, you want the answers, so the best products that should be shown in as a result. There's two ways you could provide that. One could be some the products for those queries that were likely to be sold if they were searched for, or it could be kind of what they say, kind of expert reviewed. So you are the expert of your store, of your product, of your catalog. You can kind of browse search terms and suggest kind of the top products for each one, and that as the training, and it can learn from that. So kind of taking back control, I see it as there has been a growth of improved search services and products that you can integrate with your stores in the last couple of years. I see this as kind of a step forward in terms of actually understanding and being in control of the products that are recommended, rather than completely offloading it to a third party without actually kind of getting any knowledge and insight. And that's kind of where you touched on cognitive commerce, and that's where I see that being is actually having a bit more knowledge and insight about the sales that you're making, your customers, etc. Gotcha. So that's certainly one.
But yeah, definitely. So
this is Philip. Can I break in just
real quick? Go ahead. Yeah.
One of the things I think we said right in at the outset of like the charter of our show was I'm really interested what's available today, but I'm also kind of interested in the thought process about what the future holds. My sense is that this is like such brand new ground that the only thing that we can think of at the moment that is like the hello world, like it's step zero, sort of an example for a merchant is that rank, like, you know, rank and in search, like, which is basically like what Tom just said. The things that I think are coming on the horizon, which maybe Tom can speak to, is more assistive to people, to humans that are doing the work, not necessarily suggestions like what we've seen at Amazon employ, which has been great, you know, product suggestion. But what the retailers I work with just don't have a catalog large enough to really support, spending any sort of money or time to improve discovery. You know, most of the retailers I work with have, you know, a 200 piece catalog. If anything, they're asking me to make their catalog look bigger than it is. So my sense is that most of this could be assistive in nature, like tools that would help a marketing analyst or someone who's doing merchandising to resort and prioritize products in their store, or to help them make decisions about promotions that are most effective over time. Do you have any thoughts in that, like what's in the midterm for us?
Yeah, sure. And I'd start off by saying that I totally agree. Like the first things that we're going to do with machine learning as we understand it is just kind of find better solutions to things that we already had solutions for. And then, right, you know, once we get more familiar with it, we'll like break new ground. And that is something that I think they're doing. There's kind of two different tools that IPN released that I think are very pertinent to what you're talking about. The first would be Watson Analytics, which I haven't had exposure to, but have done a lot of reading up on. And as far as I can tell, it is that kind of Google Analytics on steroids, of really delving into the data. So whether or not that just be kind of you uploading a spreadsheet of data, but not having to kind of say which metrics are important, but it can kind of feed all of that in and start telling you things about it, things that are interesting. The IBM Commerce has like Commerce Insights, which, you know, integrates Watson Analytics. You kind of have on the page, you can browse your site and see kind of a category of products, which products are performing like well or poorly for this particular category. And you can start to delve into why, like right there within the interface, and then, you know, merchandise, you know, see if there's a display issue and, you know, the common things like that. So that I think is the very interesting area that IBM are obviously integrating into their own e-commerce system quite rightly.
That so though? Are we talking about like WebSphere?
Okay, so they've got Commerce Insights like plug into to WebSphere.
Right. Okay. Interesting. Nice.
I think that kind of highlights a little bit more of, I think, how this really relates back to IBM's vision of cognitive commerce. Because I think the idea is, you know, at least as much as I can, as I've been able to interpret it, is that they're actually looking for, or what they're trying to portray at least, is that Watson is going to be like a member of your team. And it's going to be able to accomplish things for you that you would have had to spend a bunch of time actually doing on your own. Like the story is basically, you know, instead of spending your time on one specific task, you let Watson take care of the things that it's good at, and then you focus on the things that you're good at.
We're all working on teams where we're overworked.
That's what I was reading about on the Commerce blog, on IBM's Commerce blog.
He drank the Kool-Aid, I think.
Yeah, another part of the Kool-Aid is that, like, the following your instincts of, you know, e-commerce day-to-day is not like a successful business strategy. You might get lucky in the short term or maybe even the long term, but, you know, for real results, you need something that is providing you insights on the data. And, you know, we've gone through this phase of having lots of data available to us and lots of talk about it, but very little kind of in the way of tools that can actually give us true insight in our industry for it. So yeah, it's their movement to support, rather than this kind of spray and pray e-commerce where we kind of try and do a bit of everything. We know what we should be doing. We just can't get around to everything to kind of the degree that we should be. It can try and lighten our load and do some of these things for us. So, you know, the visual merchandising is a good example of that.
Yes.
So if that could be more, the great.
Oh, good. Sorry. Didn't mean to cut you off.
Carry on.
Yeah, no, I think that's really consistent with my experience with the merchants that I've worked with. They really do not have enough time and resources to really take advantage of the tools that are available to them. And so, it's just so often that a tool will just sit around unused because they had to focus on something else or felt like, you know, their best shot at working on improving conversions was merchandising. Well, they spent all their time on that, but they didn't spend any time on, improving their UX and focusing on CRO. And so I think, the vision is I think an accurate one, or I should say it's a worthwhile vision, because I actually feel like this is something that merchants really need.
Well, can I play devil's advocate or human's advocate? I'm on team human.
Yeah, okay, go ahead.
my sense is that there will always be external or mitigating factors that Watson will never ever, or any AI or any ML machine learning technology will ever be able to take into consideration. For instance,
Did you say never?
I said never. Because there are things that, you know, I'm picking up on Tom's accent that he might understand what a Brexit might be. There are things that happen in this world that are external factors that are very difficult or nigh impossible to predict. For instance, a really good example here would be supply forecasting. People have been using machine learning and AI for supply forecasting on the manufacturer side for a decade. But nobody could have predicted 10 years ago a tsunami taking out, you know, all of, you know, SanDisk and Toshiba and Canon, and taking out these major manufacturing facilities in Thailand and the Southeast Asia Pacific. So there are things that will always be mitigating factors that don't allow you to make accurate predictions.
Sure. Right. I think that there's definitely an element of that. I do think that we're going to get a heck of a lot better at predicting things that we don't feel like we can predict now. That said, I don't know.
Pretty nebulous. Give me an example.
An example is, the tsunamis. I mean, that we might, in the future, we might have a better way of detecting those, and, you know, which will give.
I mean, maybe that's true. I'm thinking more about the impacts of your business, where if given a small enough sample set, you could look at, you know, a retailer starting out today, training a machine learning algorithm for merchandising, could look back and only have a year's worth of data, or maybe a year and a half worth of data, and that machine learning algorithm could learn to interpret something that's a blip, like a downturn in demand from a Brexit, as some seasonality or some seasonal factor, and it would take a long time to train that attitude out. Whereas a human would understand.
Time is certainly a factor. I think never is a pretty strong word. Track things more and more. Go ahead, Tom. Sorry.
Machine learning is never going to be perfect. Like, our aim is for it to either be as good as humans, so that we can kind of get them doing jobs that machines can't do, or ideally are even better, which they are at plenty of jobs. But also, like, if we've broached the topic of Brexit, and like the financial chaos that has caused, the like first traders that have actually kind of been doing better in the financial markets have been the robots, the like in the machines, the automated transactions. So there's something to be said for it.
For sure. Yeah. Oh, I've got to bring up an example of something that plays to your point, Philip. And I'm not disagreeing with you. I think that
this is healthy debate because I don't necessarily hold the viewpoint that I'm arguing. But I think it's interesting. Yeah.
No, I definitely think it's interesting. I think this definitely can be said. We are not as far down the AI path as a lot of people may believe that we are. Mm-hmm. And a great example of this is. Sunspring. Sunspring is a project that was directed by Oscar Sharp and AI researcher Ross Goodwin to make a movie for the Sci-Fi London Film Festival. Okay. It's starring Thomas Middleditch, the guy from Silicon Valley, and essentially they applied. AI to read a bunch of scripts and then write a short sci-fi script for this film festival.
So the Netflix model, but for writing content, right?
Yes, exactly. And okay. In short, and
still better than Adam Sandler.
Oh, definitely better than Adam Sandler. No doubt about that. But in short, go check it out. Everyone should go watch this first of all because it is. I mean, I think. Thomas Middlemarch and Elizabeth Gray and Humphrey Kerr do a fantastic job putting a nonsensical script together as something that is actually hilarious.
Oh, wow. Okay.
It's very much worth watching. I think it really demonstrates, okay, look, you know, there AI gets sort of, you know, grammar and it gets that, you know, like really high level what's kind of going on, sort of, but it really cannot produce a script, not even close.
Wow. Yeah, and it's probably a heavy ask on a technology like that to do something
super heavy, right. Yeah, but I know it's kind of a ridiculous example, but my point is, you know, there's so much left for AI to do that's a very long way off. So definitely temper your expectations, understand what it can and it can't do. And I think getting in there and digging into Watson and seeing how Watson could help your business is very different than thinking about AI as just this autonomous practical being that, you know, can just help you.
Yeah, as Phil's touched on already, like this machine learning stuff isn't new. It's been around for decades already. Like even in terms of the algorithms that are being used now, there's kind of only been sort of one improvement in the last like few years that have actually kind of made some of this possible. The rest of it is just kind of the cyclical nature of like fads in computer science and every other industry, as well as the increase in computing power kind of gives us we can do a bit more than we could do in a reasonable amount of time now, which makes it interesting. But yeah, there is like kind of any new kid on the block, there's a bit of hype over it, and it's kind of cutting through that to see what can actually be done like this time around. How far are we going to get with the tools available to us now? And yeah, I think that's it still is interesting to us.
Absolutely.
I'm interested to hear, Tom, your take with you know, there's so much lock-in that's occurring with these technologies at this point. You know, they always go through, for mass market adoption, you have to have big players that simplify the use. And so you sort of democratize the access to these sorts of very complex mechanics. A good example is you know, IBM producing an API for Watson so that you don't necessarily have to run Watson yourself at home, there have been machine learning and Hive trainers for 5 years on that are Python packages for the developer set out there. Like, you could get this stuff before. There's nothing that was preventing you from doing it. But you know, when Amazon releases for its web services a like pay as you go machine learning. A consumer toolkit that is simplified just to the one or two things you might need, and it sort of it sort of locks you into a vendor, and I guess is what I'm saying. What do you think about, are we on the leading edge of that? Are we going to see tremendous amounts of, you know, a vendor lock in? If you really want to take advantage of Watson, I really need to be, you know, running on SoftLayer, and I need to I got to buy all the way into IBM. Or do you see this as, you know,
I can really sort good of, question.
I can sort of, because for a technology to grow and to be used by the mass market and to actually be groundbreaking, I really think that it needs to be something that can sort of be consumed a la carte. So what are your thoughts there?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question, and like, I think that the kind of the simplified API is going to be very good for one set of companies. There's going to be those companies that don't want to kind of, you know, even give their data to a third party. Certainly not all of it labeled, and the concerns about giving that out to a potential competitor. So
right.
So yeah, there is going to be people on both ends of that spectrum, and it's certainly something to consider. I think, like, from talking to you in the past, I think we both value, like, as kind of e-commerce store owners, having a hold on their own technology assets rather than everything sure. kind of being, you know, hosted or owned elsewhere and very reliant on like a third party company. That being said, I think the simplified APIs are useful for kind of getting out to the mass market, as we've said, in terms of developers, and so more developers can get involved in it. But it's also the amount of effort they're going into to explaining this to business people, so they couldn't recognize it. Because yes, there may be many libraries available that developers are kind of playing around with, but, you know, they might not get the buy-in from the business or not really understand it. But, you know, companies like IBM are helping on both fronts and actually educating, you know, what's possible with it to get kind of business people clued up on it, which is very useful. There's the next step as well, which we haven't quite reached yet, which is actually for it to really do well, is for kind of actual end customers and users to understand yep. the process, what's going on in the background. It's not going to kind of take off if it's you know, completely hidden and from the actual customer. You know, there's definite use cases for that, but they're going to want to understand, in order to kind of trust the data that comes back, they're going to want to have some understanding of where it's coming from and why. I think so. So yeah, there's definite risks for the kind of basing it off of one technology or another. The only other thing I would say on that is, if anyone's kind of done some machine learning, the most costly part of it is not necessarily the actual kind of connecting to a system and using, say, IBM's machine learning, but it's actually kind of gaining that sample data and manipulating it with the training data rather. So your queries and, you know, the labels against them in terms of what type of query it is, what is the customer talking about, that is far more kind of costly in terms of like time than the time to actually integrate with a third party system. So it's quite likely that, you know, if there's more and more of these APIs from different providers are available, then you know, same as if you're a newsletter company, you know, updates price lists or something like that, you'd be able to migrate across to somebody else.
Oh man, that brings up so many questions now. I think one of my next questions would be, you know, do you see people sort of building out practices within their companies to spend that time and that effort to do that? Or do you kind of see them looking elsewhere, out to third parties and other, you know, business practices to sort of develop that out as their specialty? Or I guess what I'm saying is, how do you see an ecosystem forming around this?
Not sure. As we said, there's like two ways of getting the training data. One is from your kind of your users themselves, so kind of by their, you know, activity on the site. So they're providing the information, so that enables you to kind of build up an awful lot of information very, very cheaply. But if you want the kind of expertly trained data, then kind of you or people within the team are going to have to kind of sit there and kind of manually classify, like, the you know, for example, the easy example of the product that should go to should be sent to the customer with this, you know, search term, which is a very arduous you know process that aren't going to necessarily produce great results, depending on the person, but also, you know, their how much they enjoy that task is going to have an effect on the results as well.
Yeah, your job changes from the the person who makes intuitive decisions to the person that just classifies the data and lets something else make the decision, right?
Yeah, and you're not going to get much buy-in from that. So it is going to be a very difficult integration process. And you know, there's plenty of research studies which I'm kind of still catching up with in terms of how to the gamify the system so that people kind of take part in it and you know they buy into the process. And normally that's to try and make the feel like your input is more valued rather than it just being a case of like, you know, send this product or this is this type of image or that type of image, actually kind of being able to give more feedback to the learning system, you know, and tell it where it's doing well, tell it where it's doing like badly. And it kind of recognizing that, being able to apply it, you know, that's kind of the next step, which, you know, I think we're, it's not a, the limit isn't technology at that point for that kind of interaction. It's more just a, you know, our familiarity with how to build those kind of systems. So I think that would help. But yeah, the training data is the your biggest stumbling block when it comes to actually, you know, implementing some of these systems.
And I have to wonder too, what, like, there's always from a merchant perspective, you know, kind of bring it back to digital commerce for me, is how you can justify the ROI on some of these sorts of tools. Again, if they're not just built and ready for you and plug and play, where it's, you know, it's something that's quantifiable as a, you know, every percent of every transaction, you know, that results as a result of using this tool. Like it's very difficult to justify the R&D because, you know, what are we building here? You know, some ideas or some thoughts that I had are, well, wouldn't it be nice if we could apply, you know, I'm trying to think of the sorts of problems that merchants have right now. A great example for me is, as a digital agency, for whatever reason, I am unable to get my clients to tell me in advance when they're going to do a 45% off sale. I don't know why. I'm physically unable to get them to do that. And if I could build something that would just subscribe to their email list, and the second that it sees that email come through, it would auto scale everything up. That would make my life easier. It's not going to save anybody any money, I'll be honest with you. You know, there's no justification to building that sort of thing. It's, I'm going to make that decision, or the machine's going to make that decision. I'm just trying to think of, you know, there has to be, you know, some people are going to go out, they're going to cut a lot of new ground, they're going to forge the way. A lot of them are not going to be successful, and we'll learn from their mistakes.
Actually, let's get into the super practical here, the real world stuff. Like 1-800-Flowers introduced Gwen, which is powered by Watson. It's a discovery tool.
Is 1-800-Flowers doing literally everything?
They always do everything. It's actually pretty amazing. Like, I'm always blown away. Like, I can't say that I really ever use them, but I do see them do a lot of stuff.
I feel like whenever there's something new, it's like, well, you know, and they have a new, you know, Slack bot. Why do I need a Slack bot for, anyway, whatever. I've become a curmudgeon. I don't know how. I didn't mean to.
You might be getting old, Philip. You never know.
That's probably true. So sorry, I interrupted you. You were talking about practicalities.
Oh, yeah. No, I was just saying, you know, it's a discovery tool. It's in beta right now. Watson powers it. And this is going to lead into some more questions. But, you know, I think, are they going to see return on Gwen? I have no idea. Like, is this tool actually going to be something that people actually find useful to pick out the perfect flowers for whatever occasion? I mean, there are a lot of different flowers and bouquet, you know, arrangements and so on. I mean, when I've shopped for flowers before, it's been quite a challenge, and maybe it would be useful to have something like this. But did you guys check out Gwen yet?
No, but I did see, it was a couple of years ago now, that IBM with Watson again did something with North Face, very similar to discovery tool. So, you know, the kind of mocked up video with the CEO of North Face is him sitting there saying that he's, you know, going away hiking to this location, in the next month. And he needs a coat. What should he be wearing? And so, you know, Watson goes away and works out from their catalog that this is going to be 3 degrees, and this is kind of the best coat for you because you're not expecting rain and stuff like that. So, given that I haven't seen much more, I was looking around news articles for kind of the results since the end of Q4 2014 launch, and I haven't found anything. So yeah, that's the challenge with people that are kind of the pioneers. They're not necessarily going to be the ones that, you know, reap all the benefits, because it's such a new experience for customers as well, and we're all kind of learning the way.
Goodness, absolutely, I feel like this is a recurring theme now. It's whenever we talk about Apple, we have to talk about how Microsoft did it first, and they had to pay for all of the learning experiences. Yeah, it's interesting.
I think also, let me take this a step further and get a little bit broader with it. I think it's really interesting to me that, like, with 1-800-Flowers, you know, it says they called their assistant Gwen. They, like, gave it a name. Mm-hmm. But they said it was powered by Watson. And yet, at the same time, if you kind of watch IBM's Watson commercials and how they're sort of portraying themselves as being in their commercials, it's almost like they're trying to, you know, compete with Alexa. And I know you brought up Amazon earlier, Philip, but I think my question for you, Tom, and this is definitely conjecture, so just spitball here, but how do you see Watson actually interfacing with the public? Do you see it solely as being something that powers things behind the scenes, and then we have all of these different named bots popping up, like Gwen and others, or do you see Watson sort of taking a more public face, as it kind of has, or has IBM has sort of portrayed it, and actually kind of competing with Alexa in some ways?
Yeah, I think, like, I don't think Watson's going to, you know, be the only one, even on top of the kind of the Watson API. Watson API has a kind of dialogue and conversation system. So if you wanted to create your own Slack bot, chat bot, then you can already do that. So I think people could continue, like, growing on top of that, and Watson will be kind of the older brother doing the job of kind of telling the neighborhood about what he can do, or people like him can, what they can do. So I think, like, and, you know, we very much need that. So I think the marketing, you know, and the Amazon Alexa will support that as well, just to kind of get people. And there's a lot of people, a lot of businesses putting a lot of money into this bet of conversational commerce, conversational interactions, and whether or not that's something that end customers are actually going to want. So it's still to be seen whether or not that's the end interaction that is going to be the most successful. But yeah, there's certainly a lot of people
putting money into it.
Oh, no, we still have Tom. We still have Tom over here. Are you still there, Brian?
I am here. I can hear you, Philip. I just can't hear Tom.
Well, to recap what Tom had said, he said something to the effect of, you know, there's a lot of build out and a lot of discussion around, you know, investment in conversational commerce at the moment. But whether or not that's something customers want or something that will be successful or provide a real return on investment is yet to be seen.
Yes. And we talked about this quite a bit already. The truth is, this conversational economy is going to happen because people are investing in it.
Right.
Yes.
And so there's really no way around it. I think, you know, either you're going to completely ignore it and hope it doesn't really pan out, or you're going to have to get out there and invest in it and play in it and kind of figure it out a little bit on your own as well. Otherwise, you're going to be missing out on a major channel.
It's so funny because I feel like 3 or 4 years ago, we were saying, who the heck wants an app on their phone for X brand, right? Like, what's the point? And now you fast forward a little bit, and there's a Taco Bell app, there's a Chick-fil-A app, there's a McDonald's app, there's like a million pay apps for, you know, for these sorts of one-off transactions that we always do. And I feel like those weren't necessarily pushed upon the companies from demand from the public. I feel like certain players were very successful, and so there were land grabs and rushes to that space.
Yeah.
A good example, like Starbucks was extremely successful with its loyalty app. And they had a very interesting and engaged and very affluent and a very affluent market. And now we see you know, we see other food and restaurant chains, and now even some department store chains that are moving to this model as well. Again, not necessarily because of market forces demanding that they go there, but that's because the consumer, or at least the affluent consumer, is being trained to shop in that way. I think that businesses aren't going to miss out on sales opportunity, or they're not going to miss out on opportunity because they don't have a chat bot, but their customers will eventually either be trained to want to chat to engage in commerce, and that will cause them to want to invest there, or they'll be one of the first that, you know, sort of get into the fray and do it poorly. I don't know that the American consumer, and maybe Tom, you can give a different perspective. I don't know that the American consumer even understands yet that I would shop at, you know, that I would shop at Macy's on Facebook. That makes no sense to an American consumer at this point, or as Facebook Messenger in particular.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Especially right. Given a couple episodes back when we talked about how difficult it is to shop on a Messenger app at this yeah. time in America.
I believe the poll quote was, it's literally the worst way to shop ever. Like, yeah. Or something to that effect. So you're taking the worst experience possible.
No, but I can see the kind of the use cases that where it could provide a better experience. Like, I don't want to cover old ground, so stop me if you have already discussed this. But I think the article that I was reading was by the guy that started Kick, the Messenger. So he was kind of weighing sure. in on his opinion on it. And the app system, as we know, works for those that have like loyal customers that are coming back over and over again. For the smaller, not global brand, it's still the kind of way too expensive an option, and you know, unlikely to see the return on investment. So what do? I think his example was, if you are going into a coffee shop, or if you're going into kind of a baseball stadium or something like that, like trying to download this new 70 megabyte app to place your order for drinks and food isn't going to be the best consumer experience. Kind of going up to the line and waiting ages isn't going to be the best experience. And actually, you know, maybe if there was like a WhatsApp bot that you could talk to, it would give you a list of options for your order, and then you go and collect it. Like, you know, that you don't have to download. Text chat is cheap, and could, you know, yeah, I've got I'm completely basing this on no evidence whatsoever, but it could be a nicer way for customers to place orders.
Well, and certainly, I think, you know, when you say you have no data to base that on whatsoever, I think that in America at least, and then maybe in Europe, this is still definitely early, really rudimentary. We talked about this also recently. Whereas, like, the data that we do have is from like China and other places, you know, other kind of developing places, where purchasing through text and chat is actually already a very developed ecosystem, developed method of purchasing. And so the question is, how does that translate for us? And so I think you're right. There's not really that much data that we can go off of right now to really speak to how we're going to interact with it.
Yeah, I think the payment integration is an interesting point, and some of it does depend on whether or not there are closer integrations. I haven't necessarily kept up with if there have already been ones announced, but you know, payment integration built into the messaging system, and that's what the kind of the biggest chat app in China does have. So that's its advantage there,
which I believe is the killer app for Facebook Messenger. If you put your banking information, you trust that to Facebook, and if you have payment data stored in Facebook Messenger, and in theory, if you could just show your Facebook Messenger QR code at a checkout, like an in person, like a kiosk or a pop up store, those mm-hmm. that all of a sudden that you know it closes the loop on the multi purpose use of a chat app. It's not just it can be used in real world scenarios there. Exactly in the same way as your, you know, both to verify identity and for payments and for, you know, conversational exchange. So, you know, to your point, I do see some value in it, but I don't know that the value is there because the market is demanding that we have to go in that direction. The value is there because I think there's a lot of people stating that there's potential future value there. I think what we need really to have a better conversation around this is to have somebody who really understands the Asian market, in particular, you know, the chat apps that are already doing this and people that are already, you know, seeing a tremendous shift in China.
Absolutely.
You know, WeChat and Weibo are already have been doing this for, you know, 5, 6, 7 years. And somewhat out of necessity, some of these, you know, some of the that market is underserved, and the population density is tremendous. There's something to the effect of, I'm going to get this statistic wrong, but there's like over 30 cities with over 1 million people in China alone. And so, you know, the population density alone, I think, allows for, you know, more innovation or allows for people to have to work around, you know, traditional means of commerce. Please go ahead.
Kind of wanted to cut back to Facebook for 1 second too. Sure. Just speaking of Facebook, last week they announced some pretty big stuff.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah. Hit it up because this is an interesting news that I
it is interesting get news. In the last yeah, show. We definitely need to hit on this. So last week, Facebook announced persistent menus in Messenger, which was severely needed. Like, it was very apparent to me when I started using Messenabot that the way that you know, the UX worked was just not sufficient for actual interaction, because you constantly had to scroll up to figure out what you wanted to do next, and you couldn't just chat. I mean, you could chat, you know, some different shortcut commands to get back to different things, but who's really going to remember those things?
Right. You know? Have to learn them.
Yeah, forget that. Right. Also, announced gift sharing, which is fun and useful. And then this is pretty exciting. It announced an entire series of guidelines and a blog. Just around.
I think the guidelines is the key here. Something that you and I were talking about a while ago, which is, the people I think that are going to be successful are the people who are going to determine or put out best practices and documentation of the best way to interact with, you know, with this new technology.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Very exciting stuff.
Yeah, interesting stuff. Very cool. Nice little
segment
there.
Also, they announced that they have 11,000 chatbots available on Messenger right now, which kind of blew my mind.
I think they're just taking the Pied Piper approach to the growth model.
Yeah, farming
that just
out
seems
of
ridiculous. It's who in the world is out there creating 11,000 Facebook chatbots?
I don't know. They are, from my understanding, they are relatively simple to create. I don't think that those 11,000 chatbots are going to be used, frankly.
Right.
But, you know, as Facebook sees more adoption of Messenger and usage of Messenger, the top ones will definitely get used. But all of those, I can't see people using all 11,000 of those right now.
Yeah, I feel like there was some sort of statistic, something like, you know how there's, I'm the worst at numbers. I should never ever do this. There was some kind of statistic of there are over like 20 million registered Facebook developers or something like that. People that are registered as Facebook, you know, developers, which is, you know, I don't know. So I suppose if you took like 0.5% of those and they all just went in and clicked and created a demo app, then you could come into the 11,000 number. Interesting.
That's
though. I think it is interesting. I'm more concerned about, you know, kind of getting back to the sort of AI that cognitive commerce topic of the show. I'm more interested really in the consumer aspect to this. I think that's the real transformative technology. They say it takes what, 7 years or something to that effect for a technology to be really transformative. We've seen, you know, it's been just about exactly 7 years. I'm sorry, it's been longer than that now. It's been 9 years since the iPhone, right. But 7 years since the App Store, and only 6 years since copy and paste on an iPhone. So there you go. But I think, you know, we're still in the dawn of what, you know, mobile computing can do. We're still in the, you know, we're still in the pre-dawn of what consumer available artificial intelligence is going to do. But I really think that the killer app here is the always on, always available experience, rather than me having to, you know, interact with typing with my thumbs. I think that me being able to speak aloud to, you know, a device like an Echo is really the consumer approach to the AI, you know, the AI challenge here.
I would definitely consider the release of the Echo as sort of the starting point for the clock, if you will, right. For this whole new initiative. I think, you know, before that, when Siri came out, I don't think that, you know, Apple ever really capitalized on that vision. And it was really, you know, it was Alexa that really got it started. The way that we're going to think about it, you know, even 10 years from now, Alexa's going to be, we're going to look back at Alexa and be like, oh man, that was hot new stuff when it came out. You know, it was cutting edge stuff. And 15 years from now, we're going to be like, oh, that was just so silly. Like,
it just sort of burns my biscuits when you look at the people that are making real money right now, that are essentially just applying, you know, these lowest common denominator applications, and they're out there making money. I mean, good on them, but there's so much more innovation in the space that we can do. You know, there are plenty of companies, there are tons of them that, you know, could even have VC funding for all I know, that all they do is they put product suggestions on your website and in your emails. And, you know, that is the lowest common denominator. So I think there's a lot of room to grow. We're almost out of time. Tom, do you have any closing thoughts? I want you to be able to pump some stuff and tell us where we can find you, but I want you to have the last word.
Maybe hit on a project you've been working on or something. Just anything you want to say.
Oh wow, so many questions to end on. I think we've talked about kind of the natural language stuff quite a bit, which I think is definitely the area to watch. And that's, you know we've had the bias towards actual like spoken voice, but the same applies. It's exactly the same as text as well, but that interaction method by text we're not so familiar with either. So actually just, you know, typing a sentence to something and it understanding what kind of you're getting at. I think, you know, both those are definitely something to watch. So that helps with the free commerce, that helps with the discoverability, kind of the building up the rapport, you know, and whether or not we can, I don't know that we'll beat the Turing test of kind of faking it, that you're actually talking to a real person. But I mean, they did manage that with I can't remember the college university that it was, but there was a computer science course that was run where one of the tutors, it was kind of on the forums, and was actually IBM Watson that had been trained on kind of previous forum answers, and the students were only told it after the end of the course. So we do, and they didn't realize. So we do seem to be making progress there. So I think that, you know, that can help us if we can apply that to kind of that personal shopping assistant experience. So that's definitely one area to look out. I mean, you did talk about just then about the newsletter and kind of promoting products. You know, that's our cognitive commerce that we've had for a little while now. And the next step is how do we make that even smarter? I think the Watson's API to try and help that is the personality insights and kind of sentiment analysis. So you get a bit of more of a actual kind of understanding of the customer's personality, so you can, you know, maybe better segment them. You know, if you find that they're kind of a very open customer, then you might be kind of pushing kind of rewards based on social media sharing and things, and you might be able to, you know, better, you know, more intelligent targeting rather than the targeting, which at the moment is more based off of, you know, how often, you know, they shop with you, the amount of money they spend, and what shopping category. You know, just kind of going the next steps there in giving that, you know, I don't want to use the phrase, but I will, the like truly personalized experience. So those are a couple of different areas to be looking at with e-commerce, but the rest of it is kind of seeing what the pioneers are doing and hedging your bets, doing some experiments. But obviously, as you said, there is money to be lost in the R&D of these. So you depending on the where your brand is as an e-commerce company, you will need to decide how much money and what you might want to kind of be experimenting with, whether or not you want to be the leader, because that's important for you as a brand, and it's important for your customer base, or whether or not you wait a little bit longer, you keep an eye on it, but you wait for the systems that kind of roll it up into a package for you, mm-hmm. and you recognize when the time is right to employ that particular a package. So it does very much depend on you as a business, and your responsibility is identifying what kind of business that you are, what's reasonable for you to achieve, and then obviously the understanding some of the opportunities that are available in order to choose the one that's you think is best for you.
Good thoughts.
Wow, well said.
Thanks. In terms of me, the company that I own, the Magento Development Agency, is called Meanbee, MEANBEE.com. Myself, I'm Bobby Shaw on Twitter. I'm sure I'll be doing more stuff with IBM Watson. I've played with a few of their APIs already. The visual recognition, I think, is really cool for kind of actually being able to recognize objects within images that you train. So I've done that on a real estate site to recognize whether or not it was the picture was of a swimming pool, whether or not it was an inside picture, an outside picture, and just to try and once we get more informed information, set the platform to be able to kind of take control over things that previously were just like, we've got a media gallery, we don't know which image is which. So that's something I've been working on. The concept insights is another API that people should be looking out for, and that's kind of the next step in terms of search, being able to get the search that Google does. So rather than it just being your documents indexed by keywords, but Watson has some understanding what is actually being talked about in terms of concepts. So that next, again, all of this is around the next steps and doing things a little bit smarter to get slightly better results. But yeah, so I'm sure to be playing around with another API next. I might try that retrieve and rank one for improved search for e-commerce. But there's also the trade-off analytics, which is we're familiar with e-commerce filtering. So you've gone through your categories, you've got a bit of an idea of what you want, and you start narrowing down the products that are available to you. You might choose, say, the price bracket. You might choose, for a mobile phone, you might choose the battery life or the weight of it. But actually, if we were browsing around our kind of physical store, our requirements aren't quite so rigid. Sure. And so trade-off analytics is this kind of optimization between all of your objectives. Rather than just filtering down to this price bracket, it might come back and say, well, you were kind of valued battery life, and this one is far greater, but it is slightly out of your price range. Mm-hmm. That's an experience that we don't really have online yet, and I'm not saying it's something that's going to take off. For one, the kind of user experience and kind of the user interface for that, I'm not entirely sure, because if you kind of change the filters as they are now to work like that, people might get a bit confused or kind of complain the site is broken. But that's, I think, another very interesting one to see how we can move some of that kind of offline commerce and experience that people have, treat people as people.
You just
the online word.
Oh, you just blew my mind. I wish you hadn't done that right at the end of the show. That's phenomenal. Well, thank you, Tom, and thank you for all your time. Thanks, Brian. I know you're having a little bit of connection trouble there, so I'll go ahead and close this out.
That was amazing.
Yeah, and thank you all. So, anyway, thank you for listening. And this is Future Commerce. We want you to give us feedback. And so if you are listening on the site there at futurecommerce.fm, we want you to scroll all the way to the bottom and leave some feedback on the show in the discuss box. And we really do want you to make this show what you want it to be. So we need your feedback. We want you to subscribe so you can always have the latest episode of Future Commerce. So you can get it on iTunes or on the Google Play podcast store. Or you can listen right from your Amazon Echo with the phrase, Alexa, play Future Commerce. And I didn't trigger that time. I'm getting better at it. But anyway, thank you so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.